I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. I'm Grace, and I'm here with Christian, who has a very important announcement to make.
I think we've avoided getting too navel-gazy on this podcast with good reason. I don't think anyone, like, very much cares about our personal lives. But for the purposes of the continuation of this podcast, I think it is important that I make this announcement. And that's that I have taken a job with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And as a result of that job that I've taken with the Los Angeles Dodgers, I must cease my inclusion on this podcast in any form, whether it's in production or in hosting. It's something that I need to step away from as I concentrate on this new step in my career.
I know I speak for myself and probably everyone listening to the show. I know everyone at Amazing Avenue has made this clear, but I'm so happy for you that you got this job, and I hope, you know, that this lasts a long time, leads to greater and better things. You know, this show was fun, and I do want to say will continue to be fun because I'm still going to be here, and the show is going to maybe morph over the next few weeks or months, but it's still going to happen. But it was so fun doing this with you.
Yeah, this was one of the highlights of my week for sure, especially during those big unemployment times. But as I was telling you beforehand, I had zero jobs as of like 4 weeks ago, and now I have three. So this is definitely a change that I need to make simply because like I haven't had the time to really focus on the Mets, and now I'm contractually obligated to not talk about any of the other 29 major league teams.
Yeah, it's this is great for you, and I'm so excited. And even if, you know, even if you didn't have the contractual obligation to not talk about the Mets, with three jobs, I would assume that this would take the back burner anyway.
And I understand it's not like, you know, three full-time jobs, but it's, you know, three things I have to like focus my attention on. And one of those is like building tacos for a local restaurant. And it's like, these are different environments for sure.
It's going to be an interesting time for you, of course, and it's going to be an interesting time for this show. I just want to say to everyone listening, like I said, this is going to continue. This isn't ending. I'm going to be taking the reins, at least for the near future. I'm going to sort of make a judgment call as time goes on, and I would love to hear from everyone listening whether you think things are working. This might have to take on an even more interactive thing. I might put out little things on Instagram and Twitter. We might shift to, especially in the off season, slightly more movie focus, anything like that. I don't know yet. And I think that this is going to be something fun for us to build as a, you know, show me and the listeners.
I think you need to Chris Russo this, just become angry solo person on microphone yelling about baseball. I think that's the ultimate path this show takes.
I don't know that my vocal cords could take that. I yell a little too much at work, and I'm fried for the next 2 days. I don't think my voice can actually take yelling that much, like a Chris Russo much, I'll say.
Yeah. It is nice to have that like NPR soft-spoken podcast style. It definitely saves on the vocal cords.
Yeah, I'll thread the needle there. I'll get animated, but I'm not gonna, you know, pop my vocal, my veins in my neck or anything like that.
Speaking of old sports media people, I cannot talk about the Mets on this, my last episode, but I would like to talk about a tweet that I saw. At this point, I think it was tweeted, published, ex-skeeted, whatever, a couple of weeks ago by Jeff Perlman, who is a very famous sports writer. He's authored a lot of your favorite nonfiction sports books, including The Bad Guys One, the ultimate history of the 1986 Mets. He released a tweet in response to a tweet that was composed by, I guess, a sideline reporter of a cable broadcasting company that supports the Colorado Buffaloes football team, where he admonished this sideline reporter for showing passion and fandom and sincere enthusiasm for the team that she was covering. And it created a lot of discussion online. I wouldn't necessarily say that people dunked on Jeff Perlman. It seemed to be a pretty reasonable engagement that he had cultivated. Basically, the discussion revolved around this very old school idea that when you cover a team for a local, a national media outlet, whatever, you cease to become a fan of that team and by extension, a fan of that sport, because that is required of you to create an unbiased perspective and to report from a truth-telling standpoint. And then there was this discussion from people that brought in this perspective of how presenting sports through media has evolved over the last 10 years, where it has become more normalized for the people covering these sports. I use covering very loosely because sometimes this is more entertainment than information, to show sincere emotional attachment to the team that they're covering. And this conversation really hit me pretty hard, as it happens, because at this time I was in the process of interviewing for this Dodgers position, and it got me thinking that there will come a time in like any person's life, if they're covering a team or entering sports media, where they will likely have to stop becoming a fan of at least the team that they supported growing up, and to either stop being a fan entirely or start becoming a fan of the team that they are working for professionally. And I don't know, it got me thinking a lot about like what is right, what is wrong, what is fashionable, what is just the mark of a good professional nowadays. And it has me curious about like what your perspective is. Like, do you, as someone who consumes sports, care if the people that are covering the sports that you watch do it from an unbiased perspective? Do you care if they have emotional attachments or root openly for the team that they cover? From your perspective as a fan, what's the thing that you're searching for?
So I think that's an interesting, multifaceted thing to talk about. So right now the WNBA playoffs have just begun. Today's Friday, so I'm going to be leaving my house in about 5 hours to go see the Liberty play. But I was watching the first two playoff games the other day, and you know, they're on ESPN and they have their panel there talking about, you know, the games and the different storylines and just season storylines and stuff like that. And they had, you know, some of their panelists can tend to openly root for players or teams. And when you're, I think you're going to have a different perspective on it based on A, if it's local or national. I don't really care if the Liberty broadcasters are pro or pro Liberty, because I'm watching the Liberty broadcast, and the few occasions I have to listen to, say if they're playing the Sun, I have to watch the Sun broadcast because that's the one I can find streaming online very legally. You know, it's annoying to listen to someone root against your team. I think when you go into the national realm, that's when it starts getting a little bit stickier in terms of it's one thing to root for a team. It's another openly root for a team as a commentator. It's another to blatantly disregard the other team's pros as a national commentator, I think, or even just a regular commentator. I think that's what's great about listening to Gary, Keith, and Ron is they never sit there and tell you the other team is bad just because they're the other team. They will openly admit if the other team is doing great and beating the crap out of the Mets. Like, they're at least honest about it. While they can still sit there and, you know, Gary Cohen can get super animated and it's so fun whenever the Mets win and Gary Cohen throws the pen down and everything like that. I think there's a fine line to walk there where you can openly root for one team without putting down the other team or the other players for no reason really other than just you're not a fan of their team, you're a fan of the other team.
I think the discussion evolves when we talk about baseball broadcasts, when you mention that there is a difference between the etiquette that one must present on a national level versus the comfort that you can present on a local level. I don't really know if there's such a thing as a national baseball broadcast or a national baseball voice anymore, because yes, there are broadcasts on Apple TV, ESPN, Peacock that reach a national audience, but we don't really know who the national voices are. We don't have this collective idea of the national baseball media. For most baseball fans, your media that you get provincially is the media that you consume most of the time. And as such, I think there are some of these channels, stations, media outlets, whatever, that have taken on the responsibility that of a national media. For example, SNY's broadcast, as professional and progressive as it is from an engineering standpoint, from a presentation standpoint, is very buttoned up and conservative. You'll never hear Gary, Keith, and Ron refer to the Mets using the pronoun we. You will, as you say, never hear them put down another team for the sake of them wearing different colors. You'll never hear them bring up Mets players for the sake of them wearing blue and orange. They are as conservative and buttoned up and polished a broadcast as there is, but they are amongst a shrinkingly few that are that way. I'll give you an example. Sportsnet LA, the broadcaster of the Dodgers, does not have that same sort of like buttoned up classic conservativeness when it comes to their own broadcast. Their broadcasters will frequently refer to the Dodgers in we terms. They will sometimes bring up Dodgers for the sake of them wearing blue and white. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem, especially since their audience is an audience of Dodgers fans who probably feel the same way and feel a certain way when their media members do that. And so, like, I think it makes sense to have a bit of fandom in the booth in the local broadcast. And even when it bleeds into the quote-unquote national broadcast, I don't necessarily think that it's such a faux pas anymore that it should automatically discount whatever the national broadcast is doing. I think that we're still trying to figure out what's the correct balance in this situation, but there are definitely a lot more broadcasts that lean more towards the Philadelphia Phillies total fandom, for example, than like the Mets present it down the middle, no bias whatsoever.
I think also there's a difference between the broadcasts and the television presentations and even the, you know, sports centers of the world and everything like that, your panels pre and post games and stuff like that, than there is to what Jeff Perlman has done for the last 20 years. And again, you mentioned it. I love Jeff Perlman. I'm reading another one of his books right now. I think he's a great writer. When you turn into a journalist in that sense, you know, he writes his books. You can't tell what team he roots for when you read his Lakers book or his Mets book or anything like that. I think it's different when you transition from just pure, this is the broadcast of the game and these are the sideline reporters of the game and this is the post-game press conference and everything like that, to an actual, you know, tried and true, you know, long-form journalist like he has become. So I think maybe he's also coming at it from a different perspective.
He is. He absolutely is. And I think a lot of it is age. I think a lot of it is, he mentioned that when he took a job at Sports Illustrated in whatever decade it was, I don't want to age him or make any assumptions about how old he is, but before Sports Illustrated, he was a Mets fan. And then he takes the job at Sports Illustrated, and now he is no longer a Mets fan. And he says it was simple. I don't think that it's that simple for a lot of people, especially in today's age, where even in the media, people are being rewarded for being outwardly passionate about their own teams. I'll give an example that I think a lot of people would discredit, but I urge people not to. Stephen A. Smith is someone who was for a long time, and I think can still be the case, a very credible and accomplished basketball reporter who learned that screaming about the New York Knicks and the Dallas Cowboys on TV was a very lucrative proposition for him. And so he does that. I don't think that makes him any less credible as a journalist, but I also think that I have the ability to compartmentalize Stephen A. Smith, the journalist, versus Stephen A. Smith, the entertainer. But I wonder how much he doesn't want that compartmentalized. I wonder how much he wants those two things to bleed into his own persona. And I wonder how many people are trying to emulate that because they realize how successful a formula it's been for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think it also is what you're looking to get out of it. If I'm going to the Mets broadcast, I know what I'm going to get out of it. I'm going there to watch the Mets. I'm not going there to listen to, you know, astute observations about everything else, which, quite frankly, you will get quite often from the Mets broadcast, some very fun, astute observations. But if I'm going to, say, watch a, you know, Dodgers, not to bring up the Dodgers, but Dodgers-Phillies game. If I'm going to watch that on MLB TV, I personally like the Dodgers more than the Phillies, so I will choose the Dodgers broadcast because I'd rather listen to the side of the team that I'm rooting for than the side of the team that I'm not. And like you said, I don't know that there is a distinct national voice for baseball, if we're going to focus this on baseball. But there are national voices, and you can tell which ones are maybe a little more biased one way or another. Although I do think that a lot of the baseball broadcasts are nationally, at least, pretty good about tempering that a little bit, or at least spreading the wealth on who gets what. And then, you know, the Fox broadcast with John Smoltz, who just loves to be a crank about everything. So, you know, that's like an equal opportunity hater in John Smoltz. It's what you're looking to get out of it. You know, if I want to read something where I'm going to go, okay, I don't want any bias, I just want the information, it does get a little bit more difficult, but also that's up to you as the consumer to then parse through. If I'm going to go to ESPN and read an article, if I sense the fact that there's some sort of bias or whatever, you can parse through that and you can figure out where maybe the more middle ground truth might be. Not that bias can't be true, just that you have to then read it through a more critical lens. And I think that that's also something that's maybe missing from our media consumption now, is the ability to read critically or listen critically.
It's a new media landscape for sure. And I'm glad that we're able to have discussions like this, but this discussion went a little bit long. There's like one more thing I want to talk about, but I think we need to take a break. So let's take a break right now. We'll come back for one more act.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, and we're back. So what was the, what's the last thing you'd like to touch on before we say farewell?
Yeah, I wanted to get a little bit more navel-gazy about this because something that I've been thinking about, not just in the last couple of weeks, but in the last few years, is why I became a Mets fan in the first place. And I've always been able to explain it very succinctly to people. I started watching baseball in 1998, 1999. My dad was a Mets fan. The Mets were good. The Dodgers were not. And it allowed me, or I guess it allowed him, to present this as the team that I should be supporting, despite me being born and raised and living my entire life in Los Angeles. It's something that I haven't given too much thought about until the last few years. Really, it was pandemic inspired. I think in 2020, when baseball shut off, and I sort of realized that like baseball wasn't the most important thing in my life, and it was okay for baseball to shut down for however long it did. My life was still fulfilled in ways, could still go on. There were more important things. But it also got me thinking about the value of supporting a team from a city to which I have no municipal connections. And the connections I have to New York are very tenuous. Like, my family is from New York, at least my dad's side of the family is from New York, but I've never lived in New York. I've visited there quite often and I like it, but it's not home to me. Home to me has always been Los Angeles. And I've always had this like very weird experience when I've visited Citi Field. Citi Field is a place I've been to probably like 10 times to watch Mets games. And it's a lovely place. And I love being surrounded by people who support the same team that I support. But I always have this very strange feeling when I walk around Citi Field of like, oh, these people that are wearing the same color jersey as I am, they're not really my people. Like, they grew up in a completely different city and they speak differently and they look different and they eat different food. And it's not something that I'm opposed to, obviously. Like, you know, New York's a wonderful city with wonderful people, but I've always felt a lot more at home at Dodger Stadium simply because those people are Angelinos like myself, and they look like me and they talk like me and they eat the same food and they know all the neighborhoods. And so I've always wondered to myself, like, would it be valuable to just simply stop, just don't be a Mets fan anymore, start being a Dodgers fan? Because it makes the most sense for me as someone who's much more connected to Los Angeles than New York. And while I've had this thought for years, I've never really executed on that because it never felt right. Like, if I turn on a baseball game and the Mets are playing, emotionally, I'm just so much more invested in what the Mets are doing. And when they do a good thing, I feel happy. When they do a bad thing, I feel sad. And I never felt any sort of emotional feeling anyway to what the Dodgers were doing. If they did something good or if they did something bad, it didn't really matter to me unless it was against the Mets or a rival team. But this job that I've taken now, without getting too much in the weeds with what my role is sort of a like half reporting, half PR sort of role. And it doesn't necessarily require me to become a Dodgers fan, but it does require me to be an expert on the Dodgers. And the only way to do that, coming from a non-expert place on the Dodgers, is to become emotionally invested and attached in this team. In other words, to become a fan. And I don't know whether I can say that like I am definitively a Dodgers fan and no longer a Mets fan, or if there's a mix of the two. But what I can say is that to become a fan of a team to the level that is required of me, A, to like write for Amazing Avenue and podcast for Flushing is Burning, or to be a good employee for the Dodgers, requires me to basically stop consuming content of any other team whatsoever, baseball or otherwise. And so I know this is something that you don't necessarily have to deal with from a baseball standpoint, because you support the team that you have a municipal connection to. But I also know that you support a basketball team that has no connection to New York. So I wonder if you've ever had similar feelings of disjointedness between the team that you support and the fan base that supports that team.
Definitely, because, you know, for me, where I am, I'm surrounded by, and I mean, this is true for you too, in LA with the Mets, but where I am surrounded by Knicks fans, you know, maybe a few Nets fans, but most of my friends are Knicks fans, which also presents an interesting thing where the Knicks and Bulls have historically been rivals. So it's even more stark of a difference. You know, I also think that there's a similarity, or not a similarity, but something related to this where, yeah, I root for a team that I have a municipality for, but I also live somewhere where, you know, half the people are Mets fans, half the people are Yankee fans. So it would have been really easy for me in every single pretty much year I rooted for the Mets that was a lean year, which is like 90% of my life, to just become a Yankee fan. The Yankees are almost always consistently good, you know, this season aside. I don't know that there's been they haven't missed the playoffs in forever. You know, it would be very easy to just be a Yankee fan. But I think that you're always going to have an emotional connection to the team that you first really started loving the sport for, you know. And I grew up a Met fan like you. My dad was a Met fan. My mom was a Met fan. All my grandparents are Met fans. They were all Dodgers fans before that. And then the Dodgers moved away and the Mets filled that void. I think that you can switch fandoms. And I think it's interesting for you that you don't just have to switch fandoms. You're kind of doing it right at the tail end of the season. Like, you're in the midst of the season and you're just switching, you know, you have to sort of switch for this position. You can be a fan of other teams and, you know, get to the point where you're just as big of a fan as you were of the Mets at that point. But I think that there will always be, at least speaking for myself, there's always going to be an emotional connection to the Mets in a way that I don't know that even if I woke up one day, or I'm a Chicago Bulls fan, as you were mentioning, I will always feel an emotional connection to those red and black jerseys. And it, you know, I think that goes beyond anything else, is sort of that feeling of like listening to my dad tell me all about how like Michael Jordan was a superhero, you know, like that emotional connection in that familial sense is really, I think, a lot of our fandom. It's not just us choosing this way. It's how we connect with the people around us and how we relate to our family and our friends.
I think that last part is really critical, because for the longest time, there really was no one that I could relate to or connect to as a Mets fan, because it was my dad who brought me to this point. And I could always talk to him about the Mets, and he still cares about the Mets, but they aren't his number one team. He watches a handful of games per year, and I easily watch over 100. And so, like, I would go years without speaking to any other Mets fans. And when talking about baseball, I had to know enough about the Dodgers and the Angels, because those are the teams in the area, and that's who I could talk to in my city about baseball. But I don't know. It never felt right to support a team other than the Mets because of that emotional connection. And by the way, like, I have no problem with anyone rooting for any team regardless of their situation. I have no problem with people changing teams. It just never felt like the right thing to do from my perspective. And now that it's being asked of me professionally, it is leading to these questions of like, what was the point of being a Mets fan if I didn't live in New York in the first place, especially like the Mets? Like, it'd be one thing if I were a Yankees fan to see success in history, but like the Mets of all teams, it was really fun in 06 and 2015 when they beat the Dodgers in the playoffs. But other than that, like, it hasn't really brought me like that much joy. It's such a strange thing that I'm wrestling with. I think I'm also just kind of growing up and figuring out that like, it isn't that important to attach yourself to laundry, because like that 99 team that I first fell in love with, who's still involved with the Mets from that 99 team? Like Jay Horowitz? Like, I don't think there's anyone in the front office or in the coaching staff or anyone from that 99 team that you can still call a part of the Mets organization in 2023. It's that whole ship of thesis thing. The team that I loved in 99 looks completely different than the team that I love today. But I think you're right. I think that emotional connection is always going to be there. And there have been years that I've taken off and like not watched the Mets at all. And that might have to happen next year as well, or forever long this takes. But I do think you're right that emotional connection is always going to be there, even if I have to watch far fewer games than I did this year.
Yeah, stuff like this makes me think of when I was in, when I went to college, this had to be around 2018, 2019, I had this classmate, and he was a big Yankee fan, and I was a big Met fan, so we would talk a lot, and he was like the kind of Yankee fan that should talk to the Mets all the time. And we were in class one day, and it was ended, and he looks at me, he goes, "Why are you a Mets fan?" And I looked at him, and I was like, "What kind of question is that?" And he was like, "No, just why are you a Mets fan?" And I was like, you know, and he was trying to sort of get me in that way. I liked the guy. He was great. But like, it was like one of those like stupid, what do you mean? Why do I like the Mets? And I was like, "Well, why do you like the Yankees?" He was like, "Well, because they win all the time." And I was like, that's genuinely not important to me. Like, is it great if they win? Absolutely. I love when the Mets win. But at the same time, I look at those jerseys and I see my grandfather. That's what's important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. I feel that. That's that emotional resonance that makes fandom worthwhile even in the lean years. And that's of a lot of lean years. Like, this is the thing that like keeps us going. I completely get that. And I would also understand anyone for like finding good reasons not to. Like, I know a lot of people who like simply stopped being Cleveland Browns fans after they signed Deshaun Watson. And I think that's a moral choice that is very understandable to make in the moment. I also understand people who would continue to be Cleveland Browns fans after that because, like, yeah, that municipal connection, the emotional connection that they have, they see their parents, they see their family in those colors. Like, I would never tell anyone to stop being a fan of a team despite the team maybe doing shitty things, because it is just such an important fabric of our DNA, and that it may be not understandable to other people, but like it's there, and it defies explanation in some cases, but it's understandable for those that understand.
Yeah. And you know, it's laundry, but it's our laundry.
Yeah. That's for sure. That's for sure. I think that's a decent spot to end this. I don't want my voice to end this because I'm not going to be on this for very much longer. So, Grace, do you have anything to plug? Do you have any sort of announcement, or do you have any sort of like look ahead to the future of what this is going to look like?
Yeah. So, like I said, I'm going to, you know, this episode's going out a little later than our usual episode, explainable given everything that's happened. Look for it to probably get back to the same schedule next week. It's just going to be me next week, and there might be some bumps in the next couple of weeks while I figure this out and see what's going on with this. And I would love to hear from everyone as this is going on. So, you know where to find us, Twitter or X or whatever. FIBpod at FIBpod, Instagram, FlushingIsBurningPod, our email, FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. Yeah, so it's going to be different, and who knows what it's going to look like in the further future, but for the near future, it will just be me, and we'll see where it goes. Maybe it'll change a little bit, to suit the new one-person format, but as of right now, we'll take it as it goes. It's going to be a work in progress.
I think it'll be great. Maybe even improved by my absence.
I wouldn't say that.
I look forward to what this turns into, and I'll definitely be listening next week.
All right. See you next week, everyone.